Bhavastavaya. For praying to Lord Shiva. Kritadhi. Although decided. Na. Never. Ashaknot. Was able. Anuragataha. By feeling. Otkantyat. Because of eagerness. Bashpa kalaya. With tears in the eyes. Samparetam. Dead. Sutam. Daughter. Smaran. Remembering. So translation. King Daksha wanted to offer prayers to Lord Shiva, but as he remembered the ill-fated death of his daughter Sati, his eyes filled with tears, and in bereavement his voice choked up, and he could not say anything. You can repeat. King Daksha wanted to offer prayers to Lord Shiva, but as he remembered the ill-fated death of his daughter Sati, his eyes filled with tears, and in bereavement, I mean sorrow, his voice choked up, and he could not say anything. So there's no purport to this text, nor the next text. So we're going to keep reading until we get to text 13, which has a purport to it. Okay, so text 12. Kritshrat samstabhyacha manha prema vivali ta sudaki sam sashamsa nivyatli kena vavene sham prajapataki. At that time, King Daksha, afflicted by love and affection, was very much awakened to his real senses. With great endeavor, he pacified his mind, checked his feelings, and with pure consciousness began to offer prayers to Lord Shiva. And finally, text 13, with its purport. Dakshu vacha huyananugraha oho bhavata krito me dandas tvai mai prito yadapi pralabdaha navrama bandhu shuchavam bhagavan navagya tubhyam harischa kuta eva drita vriteshu. King Daksha said, "My dear Lord Shiva, I have committed a great offense against you, but you are so kind that instead of withdrawing your mercy, you have done me a great favor by punishing me. You and Lord Vishnu never neglect even useless, unqualified brahmanas. Why then should you neglect me, who am engaged in performing sacrifices?" So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Although Daksha felt defeated, he knew that his punishment was simply the great mercy of Lord Shiva. He remembered that Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are never neglectful of the brahmanas, even though the brahmanas are sometimes unqualified. According to Vedic civilization, a descendant of a brahman family should never be heavily punished. This was exemplified, that means there's an example, in Arjuna's treatment of Ashvatthama. Ashvatthama was the son of a great brahmana, Dronacharya, and in spite of his having committed the great offense of killing all the sleeping sons of the Pandavas, for which he was condemned even by Lord Krishna, Arjuna excused him by not killing him because he happened to be the son of a brahmana. The word Brahma Bandhushu used here is significant. Brahma Bandhu means a person who is born of a Brahmin father, but whose activities are not up to the standard of the Brahmanas. Such a person is not a Brahmana, but a Brahma Bandhu. Daksha proved himself to be a Brahma Bandhu. He was born of a great Brahmin father, Lord Brahma, but his treatment of Lord Shiva was not exactly Brahminical. Therefore, he admitted that he was not a perfect Brahmana. Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, however, are affectionate even to an imperfect Brahmana. Lord Shiva punished Daksha not as one does his enemy. Rather, he punished Daksha just to bring him to his senses so that he would know that he had done wrong. Daksha could understand this, and he acknowledged the great mercy of Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva towards fallen Brahmanas, including even himself. Although he was fallen, his vow was to execute the sacrifice, as is the duty of Brahmanas, and thus he began his prayers to Lord Shiva. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Miritam Yena Tuzmai, Shri Gurave Namaha. So, the topic we're going to talk about today is very interesting, is the topic of punishment. Punishment is quite interesting because it depends on who is punishing, what their purpose is, and who is being punished. So, many of us may remember when we were young being punished by our parents, right? Of course, your father never punished you. It's another, because he's right here. We can't talk about that. Anyway, so let's talk about, there's a science of punishment that's being discussed in the modern world. It's called, there's two aspects to it. One is retributive punishment, and the other one is restorative punishment. It's a little bit fancy. Retributive means getting even with you, you know, making you suffer because you're supposed to suffer. We want to see you suffer. It gives us happiness to see you suffer. Hurt your father and mother, you should suffer. And when we see you cry, it gives us great happiness. I'm not saying you did that, but that's one type of punishment. That's called retributive, which comes from the word retribution. You get even with someone. Of course, in the Bible, you have that sort of statement, the Christian Bible. It says, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You ever heard about this before? An eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. So that's retributive. You know, if someone puts you out your eye, boom, like that. You put out his eye. So, of course, Jesus Christ doesn't mention that. That's in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, Jesus Christ says, if someone hits you on the cheek, what do? You turn the other cheek. So that's that's interesting, isn't it? So that's punishment. So that's called retributive punishment, where you just like really get even with someone. And then the other one is restorative, that you punish someone for the purpose of helping them. You know, not for the purpose of just making them suffer. You know, it gives you happiness to see people suffer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his poem, I think it's Vidya Vilase, he talks about how a conditioned soul likes to see others suffer. You know, it gives them joy. And I've seen that in America, perhaps not here because you're all Brahmins, but in America we see when a criminal is punished, especially with the, what they call the electric chair, you know, electric chair, in other words, they put him in a chair with electricity and FEA turns on the electricity. Not FEA, you know, AEA, American Electricity Authority. Anyway, they turn on the electricity and the guy dies, and everyone just like outside, you know, they just go, this is great, this is wonderful. You know, they get joy from seeing people suffer. The conditioned soul is like that. Somehow or other, there's this perverse, that means contaminated, consciousness of seeing someone suffer. It makes you feel better. It doesn't really, but, you know, that's the consciousness. And anyway, so that's retributive, and restorative is something different. So let's talk about making someone suffer for the purpose of making them suffer so it makes you feel good. So we even find instances of that in stories in the Bhagavatam. I mean, for example, you have the great sage Durvasa Muni, When Durvasa Muni went to Maharaj Ambarish, Maharaj Ambarish was performing the Ekadasi Vrata, and it was the Dwadasi when he had to break the fast. And Durvasa Muni happened to come, you know, just at the time when he was supposed to break the fast. And if you don't break the fast at the right time, it's just like you had not been performing Ekadasi. So, you know, that's very important. So Durvasa Muni came, went for his bath, and Maharaj Ambarish thought, how can I break the fast but not offend my guests? Well, just take some water, his sages advised him. You know, take some water. So he took some water. Durvasa Muni understood. He got really angry, and he thought, I'll punish this rascal. And what did he do? He pulled a little hair out of his head. And this big demon came. And his idea was to punish Maharaj Ambarish by killing him. Not exactly to help Maharaj Ambarish, just so he would feel better. You know, that's what happens when one's angry, you understand? When one's overcome by anger, then one becomes very destructive. He doesn't care who he hurts. I mean, you see that sometimes when people are drunk. Ever seen people drunk? Sometimes, Prabhupada says there's two types of drunk people. One type, when they get drinking, what do? Does anyone remember this? They go to sleep. The other type of drunk person starts fighting. So we like the type of drunk person who goes to sleep. If you have to drink liquor, do that, please. Go to sleep. So anyway, so this anger that comes from frustration, what is that? Jayato vishyak pumsam sangostesha bajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vijayate, which comes from contemplation of sense objects. You know, why was Durvasa Muni angry? I mean, of course, I don't want to offend him. He was angry because of his false pride. You know, he thought, you know, I must be respected. He didn't respect me properly. It wasn't out of compassion that he got angry. Lord Shiva here got angry out of compassion. But Durvasa Muni got angry out of false pride. And therefore he created this demon. And therefore Lord Krishna had his Sudarsana Chakra chase Durvasa Muni all over the creation, right? And eventually Durvasa Muni had to apologize to Maharaj Ambarish. So, you know, that's a story. That's a story of punishment just for the sake of making someone suffer like that. You know, without consideration of helping the person. Another story, we'll just tell one more story about that. Another story involved Shobari Muni. Shobari Muni was a great sage, and he was meditating under the water in the Jamuna River. And as he was meditating, he started to make friends with the fish. You know, they were his buddies. Fish bandhu, matsya bandhu. Matsya means fish in Sanskrit. Same thing in Hindi, matsya? Matsli. So it's the same thing, matsya, matsli. So anyway, so he was making friends with the fish, and along comes our friend Garuda, you know, the bird carrier of the Lord. And Garuda's prasadam is fish. He's allowed to do that. He doesn't go to the market and buy tin fish, but, you know, he catches it. It's a little joke. Anyway, so he catches the fish, and so Garuda was just doing his thing. You know, he was allowed to have fish. We're not. Different bodies, even devotees, if they have a body of a bird, they're allowed to eat worms and fish. So anyway, so he eats the fish. Shobari Muni tries to protect the fish. And then he curses Garuda, right? He says, if you come back here, you'll die. So that's not out of love trying to help Garuda, or that's simply out of false pride again. I'm the protector of the fish. And because of that, Shobari Muni, later on, there's two stories, but I'll just tell one. Shobari Muni saw two fish getting married. I guess there was a Vivaha Yagya. You know, something. The fish got, anyway, the fish had a relationship, you know, lusty fish. And Shobhi Muni got an idea, wow, why not me? So he jumped out of the water. Most people jump into the water, but he jumped out of the water. He jumped out of the water, went to King Mandata, and he said to King Mandata, I would like to get married to one of your daughters. But Shobhi Muni at that time looked quite ugly because he had been meditating in the water for a long period of time. I don't know if any of you experience when you stay in the water for a long time, your skin gets all wrinkly. And so the king said to Shobhi Muni that, yes, any of my daughters can marry you, but they have to want to marry you. And so he's quite ugly. So the king was thinking, nobody's going to want to marry this guy. So what happened is that Shobhi Muni transformed his body using his yogic powers into a handsome young man, like Sumukh. So so he transformed his body like that, and then he went into the ladies' ashram and he said, which one of you want to marry me? And there were 50 of them. And they all said, we do. So he married all 50. So that was a punishment. That punishment helped him reform himself, because after he married all 50, he realized, 50 wives is a little bit too much. Anyways, and then later on, he renounced everything. But so those are stories of like what we call retributive justice, where just you punish someone for the sake of punishing them, to make them suffer. You enjoy making them suffer like that, or you out of false ego, right? So on the other hand, pure Vaishnavas sometimes curse too. But they curse, or they punish, out of love, to help the person. I mean, let's take the example of Narada Muni, for example. Good example. We all know the story of Mani Griva Nalakuvara, how they were in their birthday suits. That's a fancy word for naked. You know the birthday suit? Because you're born naked. Anyway, so they were in their birthday suits. And they were in the mandapa. Nice balloons. So they were in the Mandakini Ganges. And they were with these two Heavenly Society girls. And they were, anyway, they were enjoying their life. And Narada Muni comes along. And they said, hi, Narada. They said, hi, how you doing, great sage? Not even please accept my obeisances. And they remained naked, and Narada Muni, what did he do? He cursed them. But he didn't just curse them to make them suffer. You've offended me, you rascals. He was thinking, very logically, that these people are naked. And he was also thinking, what is a good birth for someone who is naked? Because Prabhupada also said, when Prabhupada was preaching in America, he used to go to something called the nudist colonies to preach. I don't know if you know what that means. They're camps where everyone's naked. It's called nudist colony. Nudist means someone whose philosophy is to be naked. Just like a religionist means someone whose philosophy is to be religious. When you put the IST after the word, anyway, so nudist. So there were the colonies, still are in America, where people would just get together and just walk around without any clothes on. What can I say? I mean, that's the modern world. Also in Australia, too, not just America. We don't want to criticize just America, because that's the land of my birth. But Australia, too, they have beaches where people, they're nudist beaches. And one time in Finland also, I was there, and they said, please don't go to that place, Maharaj, everybody's walking around naked there. So Prabhupada said, he walked in this place, he was preaching, and he actually made some devotees there. Of course, they later on put on clothes when they joined the movement. We do not have a nudist division of the Hare Krishna movement. So Prabhupada said it's just like trees. Prabhupada used the example. He said it's just like trees. Why trees? Because trees are standing there for sometimes thousands of years without any clothes on, right? It's cold. Just like it's the trees outside, it's raining. Nobody ever puts an umbrella over the trees because the trees like the water. Or there's sun. And isn't it the sun is scorching the trees sometimes, or the water is actually rotting the roots of the trees? So just the idea is experience what it's like to be naked. If you want to be naked, okay, be naked. For hundreds, thousands of years, the demigods. So Narada Muni cursed them in such a way. He didn't curse them to make them suffer. He cursed them in such a way so they would actually realize how they were being foolish. And also, at the end of the curse, they got something nice. What did they get at the end of the curse? Nobody knows. They got to see Krishna. Krishna dragged the grinding mortar between the two twin Arjuna trees, knocked them down, and they came out and they saw Krishna. So that's called restorative justice. You understand? Where you curse someone or you punish someone, but not out of anger, but out of love. That's the difference. To make them understand what they have to do. And there's, of course, there's many, many other examples of that. I'll tell one or two more examples. Like you have the story where the four Kumaras. Is that rain? It's coming in, or there's a leak that has to be fixed. So you have many story. You have the story where the four Kumaras, they were going up to the spiritual world. And they arrived at the gate of the spiritual world. And at the gate of the spiritual world, you had the doorkeepers, Jai and Vijay, right? Like in the Christian world, of course, who do they have? Oh, St. Peter. Has anyone heard of that before? The Christians have a doorkeeper too. It's called St. Peter. Anyway, St. Peter. Anyway, it's not important. So Jai and Vijay were there. And they saw these four little kids, naked. Kids can be naked, that's all right, there's no problem with that. Because they were 5 years old. The reason they were young is because they refused to get married. And they stayed brahmacharis. So anyway, so they went to the gate, and then these two gatekeepers said, no, you can't enter. And then the four Kumaras got so angry, they cursed them. They said, you do not belong here in the spiritual world. There's not supposed to be this, you know, this nonsense, anger and everything like that in the spiritual world. You belong somewhere else. We curse you to go back down to the material world. And of course, that curse was out of love too. Because the four Kumaras are pure personalities. They're not going to curse. A pure personality is not controlled by anger. Therefore, whatever a pure personality does, even if he exhibits anger, is out of love. So they were cursed, and of course Lord Vishnu interceded, said, you know, you can come down to the material world and fight with me, you know, and then you go back. Either, you know, devotees or demons. They chose to be demons because there was less births. So that was Lord Vishnu's plan. It was a pastime. So similarly, in Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, we find that Prabhupada would get angry sometimes. And especially when there was this Mayavad philosophy. When someone was speaking Mayavad nonsense, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. Prabhupada would just, he would be on the Vyasasan preaching to a lot of people, and he would get angry, and people would say, how come Saduji is getting angry? But his anger is out of love. That's the point. It's not that a devotee doesn't get angry, but it's out of love. Not out of hate, not out of wanting to see people suffer, not out of thinking someone is an enemy. Of course, one of the qualities of a pure devotee is a jata shatrava, as mentioned by Lord Kapila. Lord Kapila says, tatikshava karunika surada sarvadehinam ajata shatrava Shanta Sadhava Sada Bhushanam. You've heard this verse before? He said the qualities of a devotee are Tatikshava, he's tolerant, Karunika, he's merciful, Suradasa Vidayinam, he's a friend to all living entities. And then Ajata Shatrava, that means he has no enemy, his enemy is not born. Ajat means not to be born. Shatrava. Shatru means enemy. Same thing in Hindi. Shatruvan. Shatru. Enemy. So, of course, in demoniac consciousness, we always have enemies, right? Because you interfere with my sense gratification. You did not serve me well enough, Sumukha. You're my enemy. I curse you. But anyway, so a devotee is always merciful. And also we chant every morning, Vanchakalpatarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu. Kripa Sindhu means an ocean, unlimited mercy. So we find Prabhupada, we get angry because of out of love of Krishna. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was called Nrisinga Guru. Did you know that? That was one of the names of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, because he would talk about anger. He would walk up to a Mayavadi and go like that to him. Can you imagine that? Mayavadi would say, I'm one, it's all one, we're all God. And then he would go pick him up by his shirt like that. He was a strong personality. And he said, well, if it's all one, why aren't you wearing a piece of cotton instead of a shirt? You know. So the anger isn't necessarily bad. The cursing isn't necessarily bad. It's what you're thinking of, how you're trying to help the person, or you're trying to hurt the person, what mode of nature you're in. I mean, that's what determines whether cursing or whatever is bad or good. And on Sunday, of course, we were telling the stories of different demons that were cursed, and they became demons in Krishna's pastimes. And actually, there was one other story I wanted to tell about that, a demon who was cursed, practically. And his name, this was actually a famous pastime, Krishna's pastimes. There was a personality named Pramila, who was a demon. And he wanted to steal a cow from Vasishtha Muni. And that cow was very special. It was a Kamadhenu. Kamadhenu means a desire cow. A cow that can give milk, ice cream, kheer. Wouldn't that be nice? Kheer, what else? Yogurt. What else do you like? What other milk products? What? Paneer. A paneer cow, you know. You could just go and say, give me some paneer. So that's called a Kamadhenu. And so what he did is he snuck into the ashram of Vasishtha Muni, and he made believe he was a Brahmin. He tried to take the cow, and Vasishtha Muni understood, this guy's a rascal, and he cursed him to become a calf. And that calf actually snuck into the calves of Krishna, the group of calves of Krishna. When Krishna was herding the calves in Vrindavan, he snuck in. And everyone thought that calf was a regular calf. But Krishna saw. He saw that is a demon calf. So what Krishna did, as he just playing with the calves, he grabbed the calf by the tail and whipped the calf around, threw him up and killed him. And so all the coward boys were looking at him and thinking, he's killed a calf. How can Krishna kill a calf? He's supposed to be Gopal, Govinda. He's done something very impious. Krishna's killed a calf. If you kill a calf, it's really, if you kill or transport or eat or cook, anything you do with meat, you're actually culpable, which means you get the karma for it. So there was Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, doing this with a calf. It's unbelievable. And the coward boys didn't understand this, that it was a demon. Krishna knew, of course, he's God. And so they said to him, Krishna, we don't want to play with you anymore. Because you committed a sin. The only way you could rectify this sin is if you go bathing in the Ganges. And so what happened is that Krishna thought, The Ganges is pretty far away. Not that far, but, you know, Krishna didn't want to leave Vrindavan at that point. So he said, the Ganges, I don't want to go all the way to the Ganges, so let me create the Ganges here in Vrindavan. So out of his mind, Krishna created the Ganges. This, of course, is called the what? The Manasi Ganga, which is right in the middle of Govardhan. Right in Govardhan town, actually, there's the Manasi Ganga. You remember that, Mr. Junior? You saw that. The Manasi Ganga. And around the banks of the Manasi Ganga is the mouth of Govardhan. Mukhara Vinda temple, Chakaleshwara Mahadev. Anyways, Chakaleshwara Mahadev, the deity of Lord Shiva is there. So Krishna created that. And then he went to take a bath, and the cowboy said, all right, we'll play with you again. No problem. So, and also Ganga Devi came out and showed them that she was there. She prayed to Krishna. You understand? So, anyway, so there's an instance of a curse that ended up pretty good in Krishna's pastime. And of course, this Vatsasura, that was the calf demon, he got liberated. So anyway, getting back to this particular story, Lord Shiva specifically did what he did in order to rectify Daksha. He was not trying to make Daksha suffer. And that's what a great personality does. And here it's mentioned too. In this particular verse, it's mentioned as protector of the brahmanas, you always protect the regulative principles they follow, just as a coward boy keeps a stick in his hand to give protection to the cows. In other words, sometimes a coward boy will actually hit the cows. Did you know that? Just so the cows don't wander off and get in trouble. So in the same way, the great personality, even the guru may sometimes not beat the disciple, but little chastisement. You rascal. And the disciples should not get confused. Oh, Gurudev is not being nice to me. You understand? He should think this is mercy. He should thank the guru. And actually, there's one final story where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking to Sanatan Goswami and Jagannanda Pandit. And Jagannanda Pandit was advising Sanatan Goswami. And Lord Chaitanya got very angry with Jagannanda Pandit. He says, this Jaga, he's not qualified to advise you, Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami said to Lord Chaitanya at that time, that why are you giving all your mercy to Jagannanda Pandit? I'm getting sweet words from you, and you are chastising him. That means you love him more than me. So if you actually have a close relationship with someone, if the guru has a close relationship, they chastise a disciple with a close relationship more than the disciple with a far away relationship. You understand? So if the guru chastises you, jai. Of course, don't do nonsense so he'll chastise you more. That we don't advise. Okay, so any questions or comments about these things? Questions or comments? Raining really hard. Questions, comments, doubts, problems? No? Everyone want to get chastised? No. Actually, as we know, you know, Srila Tamal Krishnamarja was expert in chastising the devotees. And everybody behaved themselves nicely. When I first came here, I gave one heavy class, and Vishwanath Prabhu said to me, you should always chastise the devotees. We miss it. And I said, but it's not my nature. If I do that, I'll have a nervous breakdown too. So everybody has different natures. But basically, yes, it's good. The disciples should be chastised. Not all the time. 50% of the time. All right, so no questions, comments, arguments, problems? No? No? Everybody's sleeping? Jeev Jago? Lord Ramchandra, you have a question? No? Someone must have a question. Yeah. That's a good question. When the Kumaras went to Jaya and Vijaya, the question was, it seems like Jaya and Vijaya were actually direct servants of the Lord, whereas the four Kumaras were actually Brahma bodies at that point. So why was it appropriate to chastise? It was appropriate because they saw, even though they were Brahmavadis, they saw some imperfection or perceived some imperfection. And that's why it was appropriate. It wasn't done because they hated. See, chastisement out of anger is done out of hate. You know, you actually hate someone. It was done because to rectify the situation. So in that case, sometimes even someone, I'm not saying the disciples should chastise the guru, that's not what I'm saying, but even sometimes someone in a lower position in the hierarchy can do something, can see an injustice and act in such a way to rectify that injustice. So yeah, that's all right. And that chastisement or that curse would have not taken place without the Lord's approval. Okay, that's it. All glory to His divine grace. Shiva Prabhupada, Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.